Hello everyone, welcome to Mahindra & Mahindra Q3 FY21 earnings conference call. As a reminder, please use the raise hand option as there will be opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Safe harbor statement. Certain statements on this conference call with regard to our future growth prospects are forward-looking statements which involve a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those in such forward-looking statements. I now welcome Mr. Amit Raje, EVP Partnerships and Alliances, who heads the Group Mergers and Acquisitions and Investor Relations function, to start the proceedings. Over to you, Amit.
Yeah. Thank you, Sandesh. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning for all to all our participants from all over the world. It has been a very interesting and exciting quarter for us. And to elucidate the quarter first, we would be highlighting a presentation. But to make the initial remarks, Dr. Goenka, if you could make a few initial statements and then have the presentation, hand over the presentation to Rajesh and Anish. Dr. you're on mute.
Thanks, Amit. Welcome all to the third quarter earning call. Before I get into the performance of Mahindra, just a few sentences on the budget. All of you would have by now analyzed the budget left, right, center, up, down, inside, outside. And I think you'll all agree that India hasn't had such a growth budget in a long, long time. And uniformly, unanimously, this budget has been hailed by the industry as the best growth budget that we have seen. In fact, yesterday and today, the Honorable Finance Minister has interacted with FICCI members and CII members. And in fact, the positiveness is getting even reinforced with the kind of response that we are getting from the Honorable Finance Minister in the interaction, as well as senior officers of the Finance Ministry. Of course, not tinkering with the taxes also has been very welcome, because that was one of the concerns that we had. The CapEx spend that has been talked about is also something that we consider very positive for the long-term growth of the country. So I think all of us today are very enthused with the budget that has come out. Hopefully with the cooperation between the government and the industry, and that's one of the things that FM had asked for in her interaction, the industry has to take the lead in the growth path. So I won't say anything more on that. If there are any questions that you have on the budget, as we have Q&A, we can talk more about it. Coming to our business, clearly the demand buoyancy in both the automotive and tractor sectors continued in the third quarter as it was in the second quarter. There were some supply constraints, more or less on the tractor side, we were able to manage it well. On the auto side, the problem continues a little bit, and Rajesh will go into more details of that. The turnaround of farm international subsidiaries, which had been one of the concerns that many of you have had in the past years, is now more or less done. And again, Rajesh will go into that more detail. And I think we are now on the growth path of the international subsidiaries. And the capital allocation effort, which was one of the big thing that we had announced in April, is now more or less completed. And again, Anish will give you more details of where we are and what little things are remaining on that. The two big concerns for the business, one is of course the semiconductor shortage, which is not a Mahindra concern, not a India concern, it's a global concern. I'm sure you're aware of that. And we don't know when this problem will be behind us, but Rajesh will give you some details. And the second one is commodity prices, which are perhaps increasing more than what I have seen in a long, long time. And that will obviously have an impact on pricing that we will have to do, and what impact it might have on financials. We can talk about that a little more. So with that, I invite Rajesh to take you through the operational performance, and then Anish to take you through the financial performance.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all of you. Happy to walk you through a short presentation on how this quarter has been for us. Next slide, please. This is a slide we've used over the last few quarters, and this is just a recap slide with no specific update. It talks about the walk-around phase and the different actions we had set out for ourselves during the course of this year. I would give you an update on some of these, specifically how we've done on cash, margins, our focus on domestic core, and the direction towards building a stronger SUV brand differentiation, and of course the turnaround of the global companies. The farm equipment business has had its highest ever PBIT of 1,236 crores, a PBIT margin of 23.4, which was a 400 basis points improvement, the highest ever quarterly ROC of 242%. And this is the second quarter in a row, and this is the first time that we've actually had negative working capital in the farm equipment business, leading to very high cash generations. The automotive side, we've had a revenue growth of 12% with a revenue of 8,300 crores, a PBIT growth of 18.9%. This does include a couple of exceptional items, which are time. One specifically is the investment subsidy of 90 crores and an insurance claim of 30 crores, which is a rediscussion that happened over quarter two, claim that was not accepted. We've worked very hard on our fixed expenses and have brought the fixed expenses down. Specifically on the rural growth story, we believe that the story is very robust. Kharif procurement has been very strong, has grown by 27%, as you can see, till December. And the Rabi acreage is at its highest ever level at 65 million hectares, which is 105% over the normal area zone. Next, please. A good indicator of rural growth is the use of agri credit and the rural deposits. Both of these have shown a very healthy growth, and this indicates the kind of cash availability. Rural deposits, we believe, have grown because of Jandan accounts and direct cash transfers that have happened into bank accounts. Next, please. I'll now focus a little bit on the farm equipment side. You can see that domestic sales have grown sequentially. But as they have grown, and we have been talking about, and just mentioned that we have continued to have supply issues. We had wanted to build inventory in our network and with us through this quarter, but we actually now have lower system stock than what we had at the end, and significantly lower than what we had at the end of quarter three last year. The index of 121.9 comes down to 85. And this is in spite of a very healthy rate of production through the quarter, but just a reflection of the very strong demand that we've been experiencing. Next, please. Left side, you see our strong ability to manage margins irrespective of what happens to industry size and growth. The last two quarters, of course, have shown very, very robust margins of over 24.4% and 23.4%. Our market share has been under pressure, mainly on account of not having enough stocks to fill in. This has improved in January, where our market share crossed 42%. And we hope that we will continue a strong momentum on market share. Our primary issue on the tractor side at this point of time is related to specific models, example, four-wheel drive, power steering, where we are having shortages and are not able to meet demands that have come in from specific state industries which have grown fast, very, very fast. Example, South. Next. I've been talking about farm machinery being a huge growth opportunity. Happy to report back that quarter three showed a very robust growth of 36% with a revenue of about 150 crores. And the 9-month revenue has been 48% up. We are starting to build an export market. Several key enablers around leveraging our tractor dealerships and bundling and financing are in place to enable this growth to happen. Next, please. We have been talking a lot about the turnaround of the farm equipment global businesses. The tractor business in US continues to show very strong, robust growth, and I have a slide on that in more detail, but retails grew 25%. The billings grew by 9%, mainly on account of not having enough stocks, and that was impacted by the prioritization we did in India, where we had prioritized domestic demand until the festival season here got over. Next, please. The Japan tractor volume grew by 41%. That's more an abnormality because of a consumption tax that had gone up in Japan starting of quarter three last year, which had preponed volumes to quarter one last year. So it's a base effect. But the business has done well overall. Tractors in Turkey, which is Erkun Tractors, had a very, very robust growth of 132%. The year has shown a very good uptick in the industry, and overall Turkey is positive from profit point of view. Sampo continues to be positive, and profits have improved and the performance is robust. Both in Brazil and Mexico, we've gained market share of 380 basis points in Mexico and 50 basis points at quarter three in Brazil. Next, please. So this is the sum update for you. This is index data on Magna retails and Magna billing, and what's happened to planted dealer stocks. You can see a very robust increase in the retails through this year, which is 15%, 42%, and 20% across the three quarters. The billings have been lower than the retail by quite a significant part. And that reflects in the huge stock correction, more than what you would have wanted. But you can see the extent of stock correction starting quarter one indexed 19 at a level of 100 is down to 44. So there's a huge correction in both dealer and plant stock. We have been talking about this over a period of time that, you know, we are very focused on making our pipelines absolutely agile and lean. And that has been achieved. In fact, now there is an opportunity for us to build back. We have a lot of pending orders, and that we do have that upside as we've downstocked more than we would have wanted to. Next, please. This is a farm equipment standalone versus consolidated. The results, the way you would see them, the standalone grew 49%, the consolidated PBIT grew 95%. The table at the bottom shows, the chart at the bottom shows you the movement of losses to profit over the 3 year quarter three data, which is a loss of 284 crores, reducing to a loss of 197 crores. And we're happy to see that this is the second quarter in a row where we have a positive profit, a positive performance at the PBIT level on the FES international subsidiaries. Next, please. Moving on to the automotive space, you can see sequentially our domestic sales have gone up quite significantly. We had said we will be able to build stock back in, but actually it's worsened quite significantly. Last year, same time on an index, if we were at 49.5, we are half of that. We are lesser again quite significantly than we were in quarter two. And just to clarify for all of you, when we say system stock, it's stock with us plus stock with our dealers. So there's a huge reduction if you look at the data from F18 of 100 to 23.7. And it's not like the 100 in the auto business was ever overstocked. So there is a good opportunity for us to fill back these pipelines as the supply situation improves. Move on, please. The UV volumes grew 11% in the quarter. Total numbers went down. Quite a significant part of the drop was on account of three-wheelers, but also prioritization between the portfolio. The revenues grew 12%. The PBIT grew close to 19%. I already spoke about the one time. And the PBIT improved by a few basis points. Next, please. Spend a couple of minutes on Thar. We're very happy with the way the Thar response has been. It's touched a sweet spot and created a high amount of passion and energy amongst people. We've crossed 39,000 bookings, 45% of which are automatic transmission, clearly indicating a completely new type of consumer coming into our fold. We have got the NCAP 4-star rating, which makes it India's safest off-roader. Very positive feedback from the customers who bought it. We've retailed now around 6,000 numbers. And we've got a reasonable number of awards, and hopefully more are coming. The positive momentum on bookings continues even in January. We had last time indicated to you that we had crossed 6,000 bookings even in December. So we are seeing a continuing rate of about 200 plus bookings per day, which we think is a very positive sign when waiting periods are large and long, and customers are still willing to come in and book while there are waiting periods. Next, please. XUV300 has been a very strong performance. We've seen robust booking through the last 3 months of over 6,000 a month. The retails grew by 41%, and feedback on the product is extremely good. And the dealer stock here is in just three digits. So there's very, very little dealer stock in the system, indicating that demand is very strong and we are on a reasonable amount of waiting period here as well. Move on. If I was to summarize, we believe we've done well on managing cash, a lot of focus on core working capital and optimizing capex, managed our margins very well, brought in a lot of focus on succeeding in our domestic core, prioritized all the investments. We see a good growth opportunity in the way farm machinery business is ramping up now. And we think with the new launches in the pipeline, the SUV core differentiation strategy will really play out over this year. And we are very optimistic of a very strong automotive performance as we go forward. We have focused on turning around the global businesses. If I was to talk about one significant worry, Pawan spoke about that in his opening. It is around the shortages that are there out of the semiconductor crisis globally. It has impacted us, and we do expect the issue to be constrained over the next 3 to 5 months, till June or July. We are doing our best to manage the situation and be as agile and responsive, because the outlooks are uncertain and we have to manage real time with what we get. So with that, Pawan, back to you.
Thanks, Rajesh. Anish.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, everyone. We've talked about reigniting value creation, and glad to present results today that are on track with what we promised in the past, and in some cases a little earlier than the timelines we've given as well. So the key messages, if I were to start with that, are a strong performance for domestic farm. We've continued to maintain an industry-leading OPM for both auto and farm. Capital allocation, which has been front and center for us for the last year or so, is almost complete. We'll share a lot more details about that and talk about what is that almost part that needs to be completed next quarter. And that essentially allows us to put that behind us and go forward. And as we do that, we are starting to pivot heavily to accelerating our growth focus and identifying different areas that can help us drive growth, because we need to give both returns and growth. So while the return story is in very good shape, the growth story is developing now and will be in very good shape as well. So moving forward to the next page, just starting with the definition first, just to make sure we are all on the same page here, is domestic farm includes its subsidiaries, same with domestic auto. International subsidiaries of both auto and farm we've kept as a separate group because we've seen higher losses in that area, and therefore it requires a greater focus. And then the rest are group companies, listed and unlisted entities, which exclude auto and farm. Looking at our standalone financials first, revenue increase of 16% at 14,000 crores. This does not include SsangYong. SsangYong is now in discontinued operations for us, and I'll spend some time explaining where we are on SsangYong as we go further in this presentation. If you look at operating PAT, up 78% to 1,745 crores, and we've seen an OPM grow by 220 basis points from 14.8 to 17%, and PAT after exceptional items is 531 crores, and the exceptional item there, again, is largely leading to SsangYong, but I'll come back to that point. First, before we go there, the key drivers of operating PAT are domestic farm, which show an increase of 341 crores versus the same period last year, and our group companies, largely driven by dividend from TechM for this quarter. And that results in a 1745 crore impact or 1745 crore net outcome for us for this quarter. And moving to the next page then, is where we see the impairment I spoke about, which is 1,214 crores. The impairment that we have taken for SsangYong is 1,210 crore. And this is a right opportunity for me to just spend a little more time on where we are. The deal that we've talked about with the potential investor is still moving forward. It is looking at a different process, though. It is looking at the P-plan or the pre-packaged bankruptcy process as compared to ARS earlier. The economic implications for us from a Mahindra standpoint are largely the same. What we have done is taken the 1,210 crore write down because the balance we believe we can recover, and we should be able to complete that in the next quarter or so. Where we also are in terms of SsangYong is because it filed for bankruptcy, it is not consolidated on our books anymore, and it is shown as a discontinued operation for this quarter, and we will not be getting any further losses from SsangYong from next quarter onwards. Moving then to the next page, on a consol basis, revenue is up 11%. Operating PAT is up 57% to 1,410 crores. The key number for us here is the PAT after EI, which goes up from 200 to 704. And that's one that we are seeing a significant jump in for a variety of reasons. As we see here, domestic farm, again, as in standalone, helps on the consol side. And the big factor here, though, is international subsidiaries of auto and farm. Now, this number does not include SsangYong for the reasons I mentioned earlier. So if you look at the table on the left, last year, same period, international subsidiaries had a 465 crore loss. That has now been reduced to 86 crore. So we see a significant turnaround in many of the entities, in some cases a restructuring or a shutdown as well. And we have to take an offset from other group companies, driven largely by Mahindra Finance's results, which has a negative 251. But besides that, a very strong story on all other fronts. And as we look at impact on consolidated financials, there is an impact from SsangYong, as we've had to take a certain amount of consolidated loss for this quarter. As I said earlier, next quarter onwards, it will not show up. And there are some other asset impairments of 142, which also relate to international subsidiaries, and therefore that's being shown in the numbers here for a net number of PAT after EI of 704. Now, this is one that we have promised for a while. We've talked about three categories earlier. Category A, entity with a clear path to 18% ROE. B is quantifiable strategic impact. And C is an unclear path to profitability and therefore an exit. Now, we had said that we would come back with this at the end of the fourth quarter. We've done most of the work, and therefore we thought we will share that slightly ahead of time. And we've categorized all our loss-making subsidiaries here, with the exception of Erkunt and Hisarlar, which has some work that still needs to be completed. So we'll come back with that. That's the almost done component I talked about. But for the rest of the entities, we'll talk in a minute as to why Magna and Peugeot make it to the A category. Mitsubishi and Sampo are not on a path to 18% return, but they are on a path to profitability, and they have a quantifiable strategic impact. And then we've got SsangYong, Gyps Aero, Gen Z, and MFCS in category C. The other part that's not there, but in fact should be there, is the Mana USPS project, which we decided not to bid on. So it wasn't an exit from the standpoint of exiting something we are in already, but from the standpoint of not doing a future investment. And what we also show there is a restructuring for Mana and for Automobili Pininfarina, both of which have been completed. With that, they will be on a path to profitability with a good strategic impact as well. Now, they're not on a clear path to 18% as yet. We need a little more work before we can put it clearly in category A. So at this point, it sits between category A and B. And all of these are being monitored very closely with 6-month milestones. And we'll make sure that they are on track, or we will have to look at corrective actions as we go forward. Let's show why we believe Magna can get to an 18% ROE. What you see here is a very strong trajectory from the losses we've seen in F19 and F20. F21 will still be a 130 crore loss, but we look at a break-even in 22 and then back to a good level of profitability to get to an 18% ROE by about 25. There are various actions that have been taken from a turnaround standpoint with regard to its portfolio, margins, fixed cost reduction, and managing inventory. There is a good right to win. There's a very good pull for these products from the dealers as well, and a strong retail growth momentum. On Peugeot, this is a business that we had looked at very closely over the past couple of years. What we see now is a business that actually has started doing very well. And again, you see this trajectory here from a loss standpoint, and we expect that to get into a profit segment very soon. A number of turnaround actions, but more importantly than the turnaround actions, EV is a huge driver for Peugeot. Peugeot has electric two-wheelers now and a good portfolio that's being developed as well. The personal mobility demand in Europe has been very strong, and even in a tough year, Peugeot has been able to meet a lot of the commitments it's made. It's also seeing strong growth in China, and we are seeing a lot of strong investor interest in Peugeot. And at this point in time, the business is very well positioned, and we feel that this is one with EV focus in particular can really get on a different trajectory, and which is the reason why we put it in a category A business. So what does this mean for us? The number that we have focused on very sharply through all our capital allocations efforts is losses from international subsidiaries. And we had seen losses of 3,429 crores in fiscal 20. We will expect close to 3,000 crores this year, again, largely driven by SsangYong in the first three quarters. And that changes substantially as we get into F22. Our estimate right now for F22 is 300 crores. And that really is the function of all our capital allocation efforts, and which is where we feel good about, in a sense, declaring victory on that front. Yes, a little more work to be done, and we need to continue to stay vigilant. But what we set out to do in terms of eliminating losses from international subsidiaries has largely been done here. And by F23, we expect that in the positive category. That allows us to really pivot towards accelerating our growth efforts, which will come from three key aspects. One is what we call our pillars for growth, which is the farm business, the auto business, our core SUVs, as well as our listed entities. These are businesses that will be self-generating in terms of cash. Then our growth gems, which are high growth sectors and industries. We've talked about that before, and we will give two specific examples today. And third is new age platforms, where in effect, we are leveraging other investors to get money in, but we've created something that was meaningful. We're leveraging entrepreneurs as well, who want to create scalable ecosystems. And M&M often has started something, but then will be a strategic investor and allow that company to grow. And we'll talk a little more about that as well. So first, if you look at the pillars for growth, these are the seven core pillars. Again, self-funding. The key drivers of growth are for tractors and implements for farm. For auto, it's core SUV and our electric platform that we're looking to develop now. TechM is CapEx on 5G as well as next-gen tech. Financial services, we're looking at setting up a digital FinCo within Mahindra Finance and focus on semi-urban as well. Hospitality, real estate, and logistics are all very well positioned in their industries, and those can be significant growth drivers for us. Let's talk about two of the growth gems this quarter. One is Susten, which is an EPC, IPP, and solar tech player. The focus area for us for Susten really is around partnerships for EPC and IPP, where we don't need to put more capital or we don't need to take more debt, and to be able to scale up solar tech, which is around distributed solar and O&M services. Accelo is India's largest independent steel service center network. It really focuses on specialty steel, a market leader in electrical steel processing, and it's investing in high-end technology-driven products in both automotive and electrical steel segments. The big bets for Accelo are Cero, which is recycling, depending on how the scrappage policy finally comes out, that could be a huge growth momentum for this. And second is electric vehicle motor cores. So Accelo is again well positioned for significant growth. It's generating good cash today. Depending on the level of investment required, it may not require a lot more from M&M because of the cash generation that it has inherently. And then finally, we talk about our newish platforms. FirstCry is a unicorn today. It started with Mom and Me in 2009, then an acquisition of Baby Oil. And at that point, soon after that, we saw a great entrepreneur who had set up FirstCry. And rather than continue that business on our own, we decided to merge. We became a minority shareholder, the largest single minority shareholder. SoftBank came in after that with a strong, with a large investment, which diluted us further. And today we are at a much smaller shareholding, but of a company that has great value, and the value creation journey has been a strong one for us there. Porter is in a much earlier stage than FirstCry is. We started with the launch of SmartShift, which became the second largest player in its industry, which then merged with the largest, which is Porter. And what we are seeing today is a business that is positioned very well for intra-city load transport and can grow at a 10x pace, which is what the business is planning for in the next few years. And then finally, First Choice, which is our used car platform. We've got a lot of the key aspects of a used car transaction. With Car and Bike, we've got the customer interface now as well, and I'm looking to scale that up. We will look for investors to come into that as well and really be able to build a much larger new age platform in that space. There may be more that come over time here, which really would look at incubation from a Mahindra standpoint and then bringing in external investors to be able to scale up those platforms. So with that, we basically conclude by saying that, as we move to the next page, please, by saying that Mahindra continues to be the gateway to the largest and fastest growing themes in India. We are very well positioned and on track to reignite value creation. And we open it up now for questions.
Thanks, Anish, and thanks, Rajesh. I think you know, multiple initiatives that the company has taken in these difficult macro times. You know, we have dealt with the COVID impact well. We have walked our path well, and hopefully, over the next few quarters, we start running a bit more and taking further initiatives. Overall, farm equipment and agri, we have shown decent amount of growth, and we have shown good amount of profitability. As far as capital allocation is concerned, again, an area where we have sort of definitely done the bucketing. And now the focus is on the three vectors that Anish has identified of EPS, free cash flow, and ROE. Opening up it for opening the conversation for questions, the first question from Kapil Singh of Nomura.
Sir, congratulations to the entire team. Great set of results. And also, thank you very much for this excellent presentation. Gives us a lot of details which we had been asking you for. Firstly, I just had a small clarification. You know, we mentioned that there were some 90 crores and 30 crores one-off items. Can you just clarify where are those taken and what are those for?
30 crore that you refer to, Kapil, is an insurance claim that came in regarding the auto business. And 90 crore, just give me the context of what, where are you getting the 90 crore from?
90 crores is the investment subsidy we get. So this is an accumulation over a period of time. We had one last quarter as well. And we do get investment subsidy all the time, but this was an accumulation. And we've just highlighted that separately. That comes into revenue, bond net variable margin. We just in the spirit of transparency, highlighting that as a one time, but it doesn't come as an exceptional item. Pawan, do you want to add anything on these two? The insurance was basically an insurance claim that had got rejected previous quarter, and we had taken that as an exceptional cost at that time, and then that got settled and we brought it back as exceptional.
Yeah, so this is fine. I mean, basically the IPS that we get on the Chakan plant from Maharashtra government, investment promotion subsidy, that was accumulated post the GST. They had not clarified the rules. And once the rules got clarified, then all of that accrues to us and got accounted for. And as Rajesh said, that every month we get a certain amount. So this is not that amount. That amount is a recurring amount. This was addition to the what we get every month.
Okay, thanks. So firstly, on the business front, what we see is, Rajesh, you've talked about UVs, but even on the LCV front, we notice that there is a substantial market share gain, at least, you know, directionally I see in retails, which is not fully reflecting in wholesales, probably. So could you talk about, you know, what is the success story over there? And also in case of UVs, I mean, 6,000 per month bookings for Thar, with you know, with more variants coming, could this go on to become your largest selling model next year?
Thanks, Kapil, for your questions. Just let me clarify your first question. When you are talking about LCV in this specific case, are you referring to pickups or which part of the LCV?
So, as SIAM classifies, up to 7.5 tons category.
Okay. So the way we look at it is less than 3.5 tons and more. Clearly on the pickups is a key driver for us in the less than 3.5 tons. That's where you would have seen a very strong retail momentum. There has been, we, like you rightly said, we've not been able to convert that into wholesales at all. The system cost, if I was to just give you an indication as a reference, is probably system cost as with us plus dealers on the pickup portfolio is just about getting to 1,000+. So it's a very, very insignificant number of stock that we have right now in pickups, and that's the reason we're not able to convert that into wholesale. But the retail momentum is very, very strong on pickups. Maybe your question is why is that, and I think the answer to that is a very strong goods movement in last mile of intra-city, and that's mainly an intra-city segment which has been very strong, and of course our brand and product is very strong in that segment.
I don't know if he was also questioning whether why our market share is down, and that is because we are not able to make enough vehicles. Even the pickup is also affected by the shortages.
Yeah.
Was that your question?
Yeah. So I think he's picked up that there's a retail growth. He must have looked at the registration data for that.
Yeah.
But the wholesales are impacted by shortage. And that's why I was just sharing the specific numbers, Kapil.
But there is a supply constraint on pickups also. And if you could make more pickups, we can sell more pickups.
Kapil, can you just repeat your second question?
You're thinking of more variants also. So
I don't want to get around to saying that 6,000 per month should be our largest selling product. So I certainly don't want to say that. And I hope we will have many products which sell more than 6,000 per month. Certainly, Bolero right now is already one of them, Kapil. So we do a large number of Boleros, and we're sure that will stay robust. But we are also very confident of our two new launches that are coming. These products compete for the 6,000+ slot.
Okay. Thank you, Kapil.
Anish, just one question.
Kapil, we need to have.
Okay, I'll come back in the
questions. Yeah, come back in the queue. Asham.
And I think just sorry, Rajesh, you should probably clarify that we have no immediate plans to ramp up volume of Thar to 6,000.
Yeah, I should clarify that. So just right now, you know, we've started at around 2,000 a month. We are currently at 3,000, and we hope to ramp up to 4,000 a month by, I think it'll be April, May. But if there's anything going beyond that, and if we see this booking momentum continue, we will then look at what we need to do to go beyond 4,000 a month. Right now, the plan is for ramping up to 4,000 a month.
Yeah. Thank you. Sham?
Yeah, hi team. Good afternoon. This is Shyam Sundar Sriram from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Thanks for taking my question. The first question is on tractors. We are seeing southern markets growing much faster from an industry perspective, given the weak base there. If you can share some perspective on the region-wise trends, the channel inventory that we have at the moment, and your thoughts on our market share loss there, and how can we recoup the loss, How are you seeing FY22 tractor demand, given the haulage demand for tractors may pick up with higher capex spends happening? This is the first question on tractors.
Okay. So you're right. The southern states have done very well, Shamsundar, especially Telangana, AP, which, like you rightly said, were on a low base. But Tamil Nadu also had a very good pickup through their season. Karnataka has done decently as well. These are all markets which need slightly higher horsepower. They use a greater level of mechanization, and they also need power steering. And we were a little short on power steering, and we ran short on high horsepower in the mix. So we did get impacted by specific model availability, especially in the south. The northern markets haven't been as buoyant, though overall everything, as you can see, the market is on an extremely strong track, but the southern states were, like you rightly pointed out, very strong. We do believe that a lot of the market share we've lost is a billing based market share, that's wholesale market share. We have not lost as much at the retail levels, though our dealer stocks have come down, as I showed you on the slide, quite substantially. We did pick up market share in January, crossing 42%, and we do hope we will do reasonably okay going on from here. Though the supply situation is not completely behind us, but we've not been able to build in the stock that we would need. We are now also starting to export because we start those markets for almost 5, 6, 7, 8 months. So we do have to start prioritizing exports, which is going into F22, I don't want to guess, hazard a guess on the full year at this point of time. We'll wait like we normally do to see what the monsoons look like. Though the reservoir levels, as you know, are at record levels, which is a very positive sign. Looking at the Rabi acreage and the positivity or the positive reservoirs, Shamsundar, we do see up to getting into quarter one, definitely the demand will be robust. That's getting into the incoming season, that will be May-June. After that, we will wait for the monsoons to give our point of view. But whatever we do, we have to keep in mind that F22 is going to be on a very high base of F21.
And you might just want to add, Rajesh, that F21 is likely to end as the highest growth that we have seen in one decade.
Yeah, so it's 20-odd% is our current view, and it could be higher. So highest was, I think, 21.5 or 22. So
yeah, so that's
close to that. Yeah.
Sure, sir. No, I was more coming from the fact that haulage demand for tractors may also pick up next year. So I was just trying to get your thoughts on that. But hopefully we'll wait and see on that.
Yeah. And, that's a segment in which Mahindra is very strong, and that has been relatively slower this year. This year's demand growth has been very strongly agriculture.
Understood. One question on the profitability. We are seeing a very sharp increase in the commodity inflation. We have also taken price increases across various segments. And that is one point on that. And secondly, other expenses for us are down 300 basis points on a year-on-year. Even on an absolute basis, the other expenses are down 14%. How do we look at both the margins, both from these two perspectives, both from a commodity inflation? Are we to worry for the fourth quarter? Are we to expect more pressures on the gross margins and on the other expenses? How do you see that unwind? Do we expect more normalization of the other expenses going forward?
Yeah, so clearly commodity price increases are at an unprecedented level. We don't remember seeing last when we saw this kind of a commodity price hike. So it would be absolutely inappropriate for me to say that's not a cause of concern. It is definitely a cause of concern. We have taken price increases, and we will take more price increases in quarter one if we need to, if this trend continues. The best way to mitigate is a combination of levers. So clearly expenses, all kinds of expenses are one, and we are trying to do all the take all the right actions to ensure that we are able to capture all the gains that have come out of new ways of working around the last 8-9 months to the pandemic. And we would factor that kind of way of working as we go forward, because I think we've learned a lot out of it, and we must not lose the advantage of what we've learned and executed. We are also, of course, as always, looking at material cost value engineering. So through a combination of management of fixed expenses and material cost and some price increases, we would mitigate some, but maybe not all. And typically, Shamsundar, you would know that when there is a very high increase in commodity prices, you are not able to pass on the margin on the cost. And that creates an effect which depresses the margin just on a numerator denominator effect, even though if you are able to protect the absolute unit margin. Is the last point clear?
Yes, sir. Thank you. That is well understood. If I may squeeze one question on the subsidy.
Sham.
Okay, I'll come back in the queue. No problem.
Come back in the queue, please. Thank you. Okay. Raghunandan from MK.
Hi. Congratulations on strong numbers. Raghu.
Can't hear.
Raghu cannot hear you. Can you come closer to the mic, please?
Yeah. Am I audible now, sir?
Still on the lower side.
Improve a little more.
Is it better now?
Yeah,
it is better, Raghu. Go ahead.
Yeah. Congratulations, sir, on strong numbers. First question, given the supply challenges, can you provide some color on expected production levels in auto segment in near term? Secondly, can you provide an update on company's EV strategy and potential ahead? If you can also comment on Born Electric platforms, that will be useful.
Rajesh?
Rajesh.
Raghu, hi. So I wish I knew the answer, honestly, to the first question. The reality really is touch and go. We literally know only that week what we are getting. And I'm not exaggerating to say that. We have been flagging off our worries about this through December. But as you can see, we've done reasonably well through December and Jan. And hopefully we will see through Feb and March as well. Very hard to give exact numbers because literally it is touch and go. We don't even have a 10-day outlook at a time. So we just take what we get and try and convert that. So the situation will be, as it is, we expect till June, July. So that's on the first part. On the EV strategy, Anish and Pawan, I'll make a start, and then if you all want, please to come in. So we're seeing three legs, Raghu, to the EV strategy. The first is the last mile mobility. We made very good progress on that through the launch of the Treo and the Treo Zor through Mahindra Electric. That's the segment which will get the first significant traction, because there's a clear return economics available there. Also, charging infrastructure will not be a constraining factor for that, we believe, because in that segment, there will be greater charge from home capability or charge around capability. And the running distances, given that it's a last mile, will operate within a certain radius typically. So we think that segment will grow quickly, and that has been our priority so far. As we prepare ourselves for the future, we have been talking about IC engine products converting to EV, and we have an XUV300 which is in the pipeline. And there are a couple of other projects that we will be kicking off to, leverage that opportunity. And that will really be the medium-term strategy. But we need to also start thinking beyond the medium term, and that's why we spoke about the Born EV approach. The Born EV approach is really going to prepare us for a future which will go beyond 25-26, and we believe by then the market and the charging infrastructure will be certainly in place, and we need to be ready with a full portfolio strategy which is Born EV, in our core areas of business. So we will not be going outside our core strategy we've been talking about, but we will prepare our core business for a complete EV transition as and when it were to happen. Very hard to predict when that will happen, but we believe we should be ready and be able to leverage the opportunity as and when it arises. Anish Pawan, please feel free to add.
Yes, thanks, Rajesh. What I'll add to it is that we have a number of assets today which are very strong in electric. Mahindra Electric has the largest number of kilometers run in India on electric vehicles, and a lot of data that comes with that. Automobili Pininfarina, as we've aligned it more towards the strategic impact, really is focused on the Battista, which arguably will be the best electric vehicle when it's made. And at that point in time, how do we take the best from there into our Born Electric platform that are looking to develop? APF, as well as a PF business, Pininfarina business, are working with us to look at a strategy for an electric platform in India in conjunction with our technical center in the US. So these are assets we're bringing together in terms of exact timelines, exact investment amounts. That's something that will be developed over the next few months. But the key message I would leave is that EV is now a core area for us. We are going to look at larger investments in EV. As we spoke about in January when we met with all of you as well, we started talking about EV then. And in terms of the mechanics and details on how exactly that will happen, we will come back with specific thoughts on that over the next few months.
So the only thing that I want to add to what Rajesh and Anand already said is that the pull for the last mile delivery product that we have has really surprised us, the TrioZone. And we are right now, again, increasing capacity there. And we have pretty much the next 3 to 4 months of production is spoken for. And that shows that India is ready to take the plunge into electric vehicle, at least on the commercial space of last mile connectivity and last mile delivery both. And as I said in the past, primarily it is also because commercially these products are better per kilometer cost than it is for the IC engine or even CNG. So that's sort of done. I think we can put a check mark on that. And once we have the Atom product launched, which should happen in the next few months, then I think we'll complete our portfolio of the last mile connectivity and last mile delivery. There are other products being talked about in that, but at least we have a full portfolio. On the IC converted vehicle that Rajesh talked about, we have already showcased the XUV 300, which will come again towards the end of this year or so. And that would be our entry comparing ourselves or competing with the current products that are available in India. But then the Born Electric is the next sort of disruptive thing that we'll be doing, where the platform development will be maybe more than one, covering a full range of SUVs. And there we are looking at our technical centers in Detroit and in Europe to work with our MRV here and the Bangalore center to develop these platforms. We are also we're also looking at potential of licensing these platforms, but right now we think that we can develop these very effectively and at a very reasonable investment. So we'll look at both, but right now we are kind of developing this platform. So I think as both of them have said that this is, in a way, we are doubling down on electric. We have always been talking about it. We have always invested. We have invested more electric vehicles in India than anybody else so far. But now, in fact, we are going beyond that and doubling down on electric vehicles, which we are convinced now that there is a future of electric vehicles in India.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you, question. Sir, for the elaborate answer. Very helpful. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Raghu. Next question is from Yogesh Agarwal of HSBC.
Yeah, hi.
Yogesh?
Good evening. Hi. Good evening, everyone. First of all, my compliments on very improved, superior disclosures. Thank you so much. Just a couple of questions. One on next year tractor outlook. Obviously, monsoons is a risk, but in the budget outlook, and Dr. Goenka talked about the budgets as well, there are many schemes where the outlay actually will come down quite significantly. For instance, NAREGA, and there are many other schemes where versus FY21, the outlay will come down because last year probably government spent a lot more. So one, assuming monsoons are normal, will that be a headwind for tractor demand and overall rural earnings? And is there any kind of sensitivity outside that if monsoons are a bit weak, what can we expect us from a sensitivity perspective? That is question one. And on number two, scrappage scheme. So any kind of what in your view could be the contribution from OEM or the government to make the scrappage lucrative for the existing holder of the older vehicle? So any help there would be very useful.
Rajesh, you want to get started? Then I can come in.
Yeah, so one, let me take the tractor question. Maybe you can take the scrappage.
Okay.
Question. Yeah. So there are several factors which drive rural demand, Yogesh. And, you know, often we try to compartmentalize culture, only agricultural investment led. But when you really look at the composition of a rural household, increasingly there are multiple sources of income in a household. And a part of that source of income is agriculture, but there are several other sources coming out of service sector, salaries of people, employees working in some government job somewhere, and so on. As you would have studied, the share of agriculture in that economy is now only 30%, and a lot of the rural economy is non-agri based. So when we look at spends and investments in rural, we shouldn't only look at what is in agriculture, but you know, the overall economic movement. And that's what we've seen in the last 8-9 months, the government spending money across various schemes. We think that trend will continue, and you know, infrastructure spending is in fact a way by which a lot of money does go into rural economies, whether it's construction of roads or you know, even work that they're doing on creating house, rural housing, and so on. So we do expect cash flows in rural to be strong and robust. What happens when the monsoon is good is it creates a positive sentiment to buy farm equipment based assets. And that's when you know, there is a positive cash flow and a positive sentiment, and people start buying tractors. And then that's a good asset class to put your cash in. So it's a combination of cash and sentiment. And monsoon is still a driver of sentiment. And we yet have to see tractor demand really take off in a year when monsoon has not been very good. So it's a sentiment driver. So right now, the reservoir levels are so good in many states, even if you just look at a very left brain approach, there's no reason to believe that demand will not be good because reservoir levels are good, even if rains are not that good. We are good to go through 1 year. But we don't know if that's how the market will react. There is, of course, the point that we discussed a little earlier around haulage based tractor usage, which may go up as infrastructure spending goes up. So it's a variety of factors which will drive what happens. But we just want to kind of say that it is a high base year. And on a high base year, we will have to see. At this point, it's too early to say what will be the kind of growth. But the market has surprised us, and even quarter four demand continues to be very robust.
On the lighter side, though, Rajesh, quarter one next year will not be on a high base. High base is starting quarter two.
Yeah, that is correct. And I've been saying that quarter one demand will be very strong. We really need to see what happens post June, July. The quarter one will be very strong because we will see the carryover of the current Rabi sowing, which is very positive, and the cash flows that will come out of that. It's really what happens post June, July that is uncertain at this point of time.
Yeah. I think Q1 is more or less in the bag because of high Rabi revenue that farmers would have. On the scrappage policy, I won't take too long. I'm on record to say that unless the scrappage policy is incentive based, it will not take off. And the relevant departments, specifically MORTH, is well aware of it and aligned with it to the best that I can determine. SIAM had been asked to give our input on what the industry can contribute, which we have given. Will not be fair for me to share that. Now we are awaiting the industry and the minister to come out with the policy. If it comes out with a good incentive for scrappers, I think it's a win-win-win. And the policy will really help in terms of demand driving as well as in terms of environment and crude oil import. So we just have to wait for a few more days and see what comes out. But without an incentive, it's a non-starter.
Very helpful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Yogesh. So we'll have final two questions, probably 10 more minutes, because Dr. Goenka also wants to have a special mention on something. Next question from Chirag Shah.
Hello, am I audible? Am I audible? Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats for a good set of numbers as well as the disclosures. So two questions. One is on supply chain and other is on capital allocation. First on supply chain, as a leader, generally a leader doesn't really go through supply chain issues. In factors in LCVs, you are by far the leader. And when we look at the other players in the industry, the leaders are generally have managed to do well. So what exactly is the supply chain issue, which products, and as a corollary, what is the base volume that we should expect from till the issue is sorted out? Can you just throw some light? Because the issue is seeming across B tractor, LCV, UV. It's not a one segment issue that you are highlighting.
Chirag, let me try and take that. Firstly, I completely empathize with your concern, and we are as concerned about this because clearly we've lost opportunity in this process. So your question is completely understood. Let me try and address these in the two or three buckets that you spoke about, so that it gives a better understanding of the issue. So on the tractor side, the supply chain issue has not really affected our production. We, after July, have been crossing 100% of our output. The issue we had on the tractor side, and that's typically how we've been managing an industry which is highly volatile and seasonal even in the course of a year, is to follow the process of pre-build, right? So we basically will build inventory in Jan, Feb, March, and early parts of April to have enough inventory to manage the peak of May, June, July, and then, or May and June mainly, and then July, August, September, we build inventory to manage the next 3 months, right? That's how we manage, because there is, as you know, a significant seasonality within the period of a year. This year, we've not been able to do that, right? So basically, the inventory buildup that we would have done between March, April, and May for the coming season was not possible because of the lockdown. And our plants being in Maharashtra were more affected because Maharashtra had a much, much stricter lockdown and a much higher proportion of COVID near the part of the country in the early phase. So we just couldn't build any inventory for the peak season. Whatever we had, we sold out. And whatever we were producing through July, August, September, again got consumed because the demand stayed strong, even post the typical peak season of August or July, and August and September stayed strong as well. So we just could not build inventory going into the season of October and November. I mean, we opened in a few thousand tractors. It's a business model that we had followed so far, and in this business model never accounted for a time that you will be closed for a month and a half or two in a peak season or pre-peak season, right? So hopefully we will get out of that soon, and we will get the Jan, Feb, March period now to start building inventory, because this is the low, relatively the low season. Does that, Chirag, answer the tractor part?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like we are not able to produce. We are producing very well, but we don't have the benefit of any carryover inventory to manage the huge increase in demand. It's very similar story in pickups, right? So pickups as well, demand has turned out to be much, much higher. And, you know, we again produced at our peak capacity, but we were capacity constrained because the demand has crossed the peak capacity. And again, there was no opportunity to pre-build in auto for almost 3 months. Again, Maharashtra centric. So the pickup story and the tractor story are very similar. In the case of auto, it has been more driven in the initial month because of the BS6 transition. So in Feb and March, we were not able to make the transition because the lockdown started in other parts of the world before it started in India. And many components which were needed for BS6, even though it was a very small percentage of the sale, would not come in and we couldn't do the BS6 transition. We opened on 1st April with no BS4 inventory because that was all to be liquidated. So the channel was completely empty and we had not started BS6 production because it got stalled because of what happened in China in February, March. So the channel was completely dry. Our own pipeline was completely dry. And we were then shut for another 6 to 8 after that. So we've just not had any chance to build back inventory. Once we've overcome all the issues related to the BS6 ramp up and all, unfortunately, a new issue has come, which is totally unexpected, which is the semiconductor crisis. Right? That's hit everybody in the world out of the blue. We have no other supplies issues right now. All our issues at the moment are related to the semiconductor issue. All other supply constraints which were linked to ramping up were all behind us. And of course, there is another issue which is affecting everybody, which is overall steel shortage. So these are really the two key concerns. Does it answer the SUV piece?
Yeah.
So it's very unfortunate and we ourselves realize what a golden opportunity we are missing because our brands are in very good traction. But unfortunately, this is what it is at this point.
So and current volumes are manageable. So we can assume that the current volume run rate that we are seeing is what you can achieve sustainably. And then incrementally, we need to look at how things play out. That is the right way of looking at it?
Except for the uncertainty around ECU, I mean, we are hoping that we should be able to manage with the level at which we are at this point of time. But clearly, we are at this point not able to capitalize on the upside.
Thank you. And okay. Second...
Yeah, Chirag, I think we can carry over at some other point. We also need to close in. Take the final, probably we can catch, with the IR team separately for all the balance questions. One final question from Gunjan.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my questions. Really impressive presentation. So thanks for sharing all those details. I had two questions. Firstly, given a large part of this capital allocation fix that we've been talking about is well executed. Is there any assessment of the capital commitment that we will now see in the underlying subs, be it listed, unlisted, and also if you can talk about the core capex requirements?
I'll take that, Gunjan. And in terms of core capex, we have talked about 9,000 crores for the next cycle, which is down from 12,000. The next cycle for 3 years starting F22. And what we have also said earlier is once we finish the capital allocation actions, we will come back with a range that we expect for capital required for subsidiaries. I can say today that it will be a lot lower than what we've seen in the past because a lot of the capital that has gone for a loss-making international subsidiaries will not be required again. A number of them are starting to generate cash as well, but the specific range that you're looking for, that we will come back with once the capital allocation exercise is completed because that will give us a sense of which entities are staying, what are the milestones, what capital do they require. The one boundary that we have also created is that any cash generation from auto and farm will not be used for other investments. So capital required for other investments will be generated from those group companies and we will therefore categorize them. It does not completely answer your question as yet because your question also is the cash generated by auto and farm, how much of that will be used for international subsidiaries of auto and farm? That, as I said, we will come back once the capital allocation is 100% complete.
Okay, got it. Just the second question I had was on the auto business. Is there any order book that you can share which, you know, you haven't been able to service, because there's clearly a wait period on XUV300, there's wait period on Thar and some of the other models. So any order book number, plus how does it play out for the incremental launches, because we don't have really visibility on, you know, the semiconductor issue. Does it mean that some of those new launches also could get deferred out because you don't want to be launching them when, you know, we are not sure of, you know, the supply side?
Rajesh?
Yeah, let me take the second question first, Gunjan. So, frankly, if we are not adequately ready with quantities because of ECU shortage, we would push the launch in the quarter one that's planned at this point of time. It would reveal, but we may not actually launch and start booking. So we'll have to wait and watch and see that situation. So I don't want to kind of at this point of say we will go ahead and launch irrespective of what the availability is. It would take away the impact unless we are able to at least supply some reasonable quantities. So we'll have to wait and watch for that. For the 601 launch at quarter one, we are at a reasonable level of readiness, and we will have to wait and see what happens on the ECU front. The order book is always very hard to estimate. We, like you rightly said, we have a order book in Thar which runs into months at this point of time. We have a XUV 300 order book which is at least 2.5 months of current production. And as somebody pointed out in the media call a little earlier, we've hardly actually produced Marazzos and you know, the TUVs and even XUV 500 because we've basically been prioritizing Thar XUV 300 and Bolero Scorpio, which are our four key SUV models followed by pickups. So basically everything else has got into a low priority from a production standpoint. So let's just hope, you know, I'm sure you look at us as a long-term business and we'll take a positive message away that, you know, our SUV business and our auto business is very vibrant and thriving. And hopefully we'll get over this in a few months and we have a long, strong future ahead for our business.
No, thank you. This is helpful. Just out of curiosity, how come you don't have electric in the growth businesses that you've laid out, just Susten and Axelo? How come electric is not there, given
it was there under auto and it's also there under the gems. So it had already come twice, I think. That's why I didn't add it. Somebody already told him it's in too many places now.
The reason the question has been asked, that last time it was in the gems list, this time it is moved from the gems list to the core. Right, Anis?
Okay.
That's correct. It's the key group.
It's actually been promoted.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. I think, we will stop the question answer session here. Dr. Goenka, concluding remarks from you.
Well, I just want to take a couple of minutes to say that this is my last formal interaction that I'm having with the analyst group here. And just want to say that I have always enjoyed these interactions, and actually your questions have always made me question many things and gone back and thought through as to what should be different. In fact, I'll tell you something where your questioning has really had an impact on things going forward. From the last 20, 25 years, those of you who have been following Mahindra, and this bunch is fairly young, so I don't think anybody would have been there 20 years ago. But those who have been following would agree with me that Mahindra really has come a long way. We are a confident, forward-looking organization, unquestionable, and this is what we are very proud of, unquestionable in our governance and core values. But clearly there is a lot more for us to do, and a lot of opportunities ahead for us. And the new leadership team that is in front of you, Anis and Rajesh, are well poised to take the company way beyond where we are today. Now, for the new leadership team to walk into COVID crisis from almost the day one of transition, that is April 1st, was most challenging But I hope that you will agree when you look at the performance and results with me that the team has managed the crisis admirably well. And the worst of COVID is now behind us, hopefully. And now we look forward to growth going forward, but for the semiconductor problem. Changes in Mahindra are already visible. And what you may be witnessing is, I could call it Mahindra 3.0. The 2002 blue chip was perhaps Mahindra 2.0, and now it is Mahindra 3.0. Changes are partly due to strategic realignment and partly outcome of COVID. Outcome of COVID, I mean by that, is learning from COVID as well as what COVID made us introspect and say what we should and should not be doing. The biggest visible change, and that's key to this group, analyst group, is our capital allocation. We talked about that first time, and he's talked about that in April. In fact, you are the people who had been criticizing us for a long time on us doing too many things. And finally, you should be happy that your voice was heard by the management leadership team. And you can clearly see that we are now more focused on the core and simplifying our business portfolio with. And this is the important part, because some may wonder whether we are lowering our ambitions. The answer is no. We are not at all lowering our aspirations. When you look at the list of the gems, when you look at the various platforms that you talked about, how we are looking at the core, we certainly are not lowering our aspirations at all as we simplify our business. And there are many other changes that are happening, work in progress, and Anish and Rajesh will communicate at the right time. But what I also want to point out today is that we are, in a way, defining the new normal. Taking into account COVID learnings and many other things. And this new normal may not be visible from outside, because this is how we do our business, how we conduct our business, but all will, but will majorly affect our business outcome. And I believe all in a positive direction. And there are a lot of positive things that we have learned out of COVID, which will really help the business in many different ways. You can see it now that the company is very well funded. Has a very robust strategy in our core business of auto and tractor and others also. A very strong product pipeline. Thar was just the beginning of it, and you will see more and more both on the auto and tractor side. We have talked about it. Significant focus coming now on electric vehicles, though we've been doing it for last 10 years, but we are doubling down on electric vehicles. And digital transformation, again, something that will redefine the business. And a team that I would like to say to the last person that is fully ready and charged to deliver on the vision that has been set forward. So I hope that I'm not violating any regulation, any rules of what can be said in the analyst meet. But I would like to conclude by saying that I'm confident that best of Mahindra is ahead of us. Thank you very much for all the interaction and all the gyan that I have picked up from all of you. I'm sure that I'll see you in different places, but this is my last formal interaction with the analysts as the managing director and CEO of Mahindra. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Goenka. With this, we come to an end of the analyst presentation and the question answer session.
Yeah, Amit, I just want to add, just thank you everyone for your time. I know we couldn't answer all the questions you had today, but the IR team is there to help with all the questions. And if you need to have follow-up sessions with us, we'd be happy to do that as well. So we're available to answer questions that you have, and let us know what you need. Thank you. Yeah.